Hey everybody, this is John Hatfield, and I wanted to take a minute to tell you about Planning Center and their excellent suite of apps. Planning Center makes church management software that is extremely powerful and very easy to use. As an associate pastor, it would be impossible for me to do my job without Planning Center. Specifically, Planning Center services as a worship leader and as somebody who coordinates volunteers. But also, my church uses the entire suite of Planning Center software. Planning Center Giving, Planning Center Resources, Planning Center Groups. We use all of these apps to help us take the administrative side out of the equation when we're planning ministry. I'm not a particularly administratively gifted person, and so Planning Center makes it a lot easier for me to do my job well. I can't recommend Planning Center enough, so make sure you check them out at planning.center. And now, on to Hymistry. From Milieu Media Group, this is Hymistry.
A show for people who lead hymns and people who love hymns. We're your hosts. I'm Luke Bronner.
And I'm John Hatfield. And this is episode 22, Resurrection with the Welcome Wagon. Hey friends, welcome back to Hymistry and happy Easter. Luke, it is great to be back in this room with you.
Indeed. Happy Easter, John.
Happy Easter.
It's actually the beginning of Holy Week when we release this episode, so we've got a little bit of a journey to walk this week. But this episode is going to be full of resources specifically for Easter. We've had kind of a long break, unexpectedly. We've launched our third season, and then we took this big long pause. John, do you want to tell us what that was about?
Well, you say break, which I think is appropriate. We've been off for a while. We had a Christmas episode that was fantastic with Cameron Deason Hammond. And then you heard nothing from us for a long time because 3 days before Christmas, I broke my arm.
Yes.
I broke my left arm.
At your Christmas Eve rehearsal, no less.
At my Christmas Eve rehearsal. So I was out of commission for a little while, but I'm back to playing the guitar thanks to a wonderful orthopedic surgeon. I didn't have to have surgery, but she was instrumental in my recovery.
And it seems odd that a broken arm would stop production of a podcast because how much do you use your arm? Except that you couldn't drive.
I couldn't drive.
Yeah. And we live on opposite sides of town. So,
yeah, it made things a little bit difficult logistically. And so we sort of paused everything for a little while, which was great because it allowed time to kind of recenter and focus on what we were going to do. And I don't think it's coincidental that we decided to sort of bring the podcast back for an Easter episode
and call it Resurrection.
And call it Resurrection.
It was a nice setup. So I appreciate the sacrifice that you made in order for us to be able to have
you do what
this
you gotta do.
Little joke.
Yeah.
So, glad you're at 100%
so,
again.
Thanks. Yeah. It's really good to be back into the swing of things. I didn't realize how much it would affect me emotionally and spiritually to go through that, but when you break your arm and you can't do the thing that you love to do the most, it makes things a little weird for a while, but it's really good to be back. And it's really good to be here and get to talk about Easter and get to share some of the stuff that we found. Easter, obviously, is sort of a time that we all celebrate together. So this is not an obscure church holiday or anything like that.
Right.
But the ways that we celebrate Easter and the ways that we talk about Easter can be kind of diverse as we really dive into it. And so we wanted to kind of take it from the angle of looking at Easter as sort of the bigger picture of the season and not just the single Sunday.
Yeah, so Eastertide.
Right. So Eastertide is a 50-day feast from Easter Sunday to Pentecost. So we've gone through the entire Lenten season between Ash Wednesday and Easter. And we're getting ready to walk through that as this episode releases. We'll be walking through Holy Week. So Palm Sunday, Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, and into Easter Sunday. And all of us, Luke and I, our listeners, have different ways of observing and celebrating Holy Week. And then Easter comes and we're all kind of on the same page for Sunday morning. But there's 49 more days after that that the church has historically considered Eastertide. And it's a 50-day party. It's not just a one Sunday event. And we want to talk about it and find ways that we can kind of keep that party going for those 50 days. And some of that has to do with how do we find or how do we refresh songs about resurrection that we can sing multiple times throughout the season and they still have new life and validity and all that stuff to keep the party going.
Yeah. I mean, the same as we talk about Christmas being a 12-day season, it's the same conversation of how do we continue to observe this? How do we continue to be intentional in our celebration of Easter for the entire season?
Right. And that's kind of the idea. If we're going to go through 40 days of fasting and preparation and all that Lent is leading up to Easter, then isn't it fitting that our Easter celebration is actually even bigger and longer than that period of fasting and preparation, you know? So that should be the big party, and it is. And we want to give you some songs that we think help enliven that celebration. So we want to keep singing about Easter beyond just Easter Sunday. And some of that comes from reimagined traditional hymns. You know, if you've been listening to the show for any period of time, there's a lot of retuned hymns out there that are songs that we are familiar with lyrically, but they've got new tunes. Then there's also more obscure texts that we don't maybe sing all the time, or texts that we're not aware of because of our tradition or our background. And those have been reintroduced into our singing in a way that it's almost like getting a new song for the first time.
Yeah.
So we're going to share some of both of those in this episode. We're going to talk about songs from one of our favorite retuning hymn projects, Page 116. We're going to share some music from the Village Church, and we'll also get to sit down with Vito Aiuto from the Welcome Wagon, which was an interview that we've been looking forward to for a long time. So let's jump into the idea of a sort of a well-known hymn that's been reimagined with a new tune. And this is one that I try to lead every Easter just to kind of give people a fresh take on a really common resurrection hymn. And that's Christ the Lord is Risen Today.
By another of our very favorite guests on this show, a regular guest on this show, Latifa Alatas of Page CXVI.
The hymn is very well known. I think it's probably one of those that most churches incorporate into their singing on at least Easter Sunday, but her version is so kind of playful in the way that it reimagines. It opens with this ukulele and builds into this really sort of explosive celebration that I think is indicative of the season. It's really exciting to get to share that with my congregation each year because it sort of catches people off guard a little bit. They recognize the
lyrics. Do you lead it from ukulele?
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, it's just kind of a fun way to start things off and is a little bit different. So this is Christ the Lord is Risen Today by Latifa Alatas.
Christ the Lord is risen today. Earth and heaven and chorus say, joys and triumphs high, oh, sing ye heavens and earth reply, alleluia.
So continuing in kind of that vein of songs that we may be familiar with lyrically that celebrate Easter and speak of the resurrection, This is a hymn that lyrically I was familiar with, but the first time I ever heard it reimagined was this version, the Welcome Wagon's version. And it's a very simple hymn. Somehow the Welcome Wagon took it and made it even a little bit more simple. And I really appreciate sort of the beauty of that minimalist approach to it. I Know That My Redeemer Lives is a wonderful text, sort of on the assurance of the resurrection and what that means. And before we play the song, we wanted to share a bit of our interview with Vito Aiuto from the Welcome Wagon. This song is on the Welcome Wagon record called Precious Remedies Against Satan's Devices, which is a really kind of fun title.
Yeah, you talked about Latifah's arrangement of Christ the Lord is Risen Today being so playful. These guys, they're just kind of playful with all of their musical arrangements. I mean, I love what they do.
It's very quirky, and it's very indicative of their main influence, I guess, their main musical influence is Sufjan Stevens.
Yeah, he produced the first couple records, and certainly you can hear his influence in that album.
Yeah, absolutely. So Luke got a chance to sit down with Vito and hear some of his story, hear some of his background with hymns and as a pastor, and talk a little bit about this song as well. So we wanted to take a moment and just share some of that interview. So here's Luke Bronner sitting down with Vito Aiuto from the Welcome Wagon.
Vito, welcome to Hymnistry. So glad to have you today.
I'm really glad to be here. Thanks.
Man, so longtime fan of you and your wife's music. I've been following you guys for years, and so it's a joy to have you with us today. Wanted to hear just a little bit about sort of how you got into retuning hymns in general.
Yeah, I guess I can think of two streams that kind of flow into it. The one was that I didn't grow up playing music at all. And when I started to play guitar when I was about 25, at some point in time, somebody gave me a hymn book, and it was all these old chestnuts from like the 19th century, all these real kind of, I think a lot of them were Baptist and revival hymns. And I didn't read music at all. I could barely even play any chords. And so part of it was just making up the melodies and making up, or sometimes I would play the chords, you know, it's like C, F, C, F, G. And I'd play those, but I didn't know how to sing the melody. So I would just sing my own melody. That'd be one thing. And then also I was a Reformed University Fellowship campus pastor for about 3 years. And Kevin Twitt, who is at Belmont University, I think there are a lot of people that he sort of touched that ended up being somehow a part of that world of retuned hymns, Sandra McCracken and a handful of other people that he's connected with. And of course himself, he's written lots of great retuned hymns. So I was never part of the RUF movement specifically or officially, but it had a big impact on me because I loved those old hymns and I thought I could make up my own music to this. And it kind of also showed me that writing songs is just making stuff up. You know, it's just seeing something and you think, oh, that sounds okay. So that's kind of how it started, those two things.
Yeah. So did you grow up in the church?
No, I didn't. My mom baptized me in the sink when I was a couple weeks old. And I found that out not too long ago.
Wow.
She was a Roman Catholic, it still is. And she was afraid that I would go to limbo or purgatory or some other awful place. So I was baptized. And my family took us to the local Presbyterian church sometimes. So we would go, you know, for 6-8 weeks in a row, and then we wouldn't go for a long time. My mom, like I said, was Roman Catholic, and I think she was sort of interested in taking us someplace that was going to be good for us. And so in some ways, it was formative to be there. In other ways, I didn't grow up in a Christian home in the sense that we never talked about faith in God or in Jesus. We never prayed. And I'm not saying that in a way that like, gee, my parents really dropped the ball. It just was who we were. Yeah. We just didn't do that.
So what was sort of your journey then? How did you get from being baptized in the sink in a not terribly religious family to being a pastor of a church?
Yeah, I was in college and I had a conversion experience where, you know, I've thought about this a lot. I really think it had to do with between the ages of 16 and 25, if you don't have some kind of nervous breakdown or sort of break of some kind, it's probably uncommon. You know, almost everybody I know, whether or not they became more religious or less religious or had a situation where they found out more who they were or less or whatever. And I had one of those and it involved me praying. And the prayer that I remembered was one that I heard from TV or the radio where they said, if you need to be saved, call on Jesus. And I really did do that. I felt like I needed to be saved in some kind of a way. And so I prayed. And honestly, I didn't feel that much better after I prayed. But I thought, I've got to find something to do with my life because I don't think that the path I'm on right now is going to take me anywhere good. And so I started to go to a local church, and I just got more and more interested and more, you know, I would sit in the back of that church and the stories they were telling and what they were saying about Jesus and what that community was. It felt very foreign to me because it was very different from the way that I grew up, but it also felt like it might be home too. So it took a long time, but that's sort of the path. And then I went to seminary, not because I was for sure I wanted to be a pastor, but because I just wanted to study the Bible more and I wanted to learn more about who God was. And I also just really liked that environment. I like learning and I like reading. And I found out there's a place you could go and do that. And people were reading the Bible and studying it. And that seemed really exciting to me. So that's why I went. And I'm still figuring out what a pastor does. I've been a pastor for about 15, 17 years, something. I was going to say, and then I found out what a pastor did and I decided to do that, but I'm still finding it out. Yeah. So that's kind of how I got there.
In sort of your spiritual development, were there any hymns that played a particular part of your development?
Yeah. I mean, one is Come Thou Fount. Mm-hmm. And there's a beauty of growing up with these hymns forever, right? There's a beauty, and people that I know who grew up in the church can look back and those songs have been in the air and in the blood and in their hearts. And I envy that. There's another kind of joy though, when you're 25 years old or 26 and someone says, have you ever heard this song? Come Thou Fount, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. If you hear that for the first time, it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
You know, I have video of my son who was 2 or 3 years old. I saw him eat ice cream for the first time. And the look on his face, it was revelatory. It was like, this exists in the world and you've been, you know, and it just his eyes wide. And I feel like some of these hymns, you know, there was a woman at our seminary and her brother died and I went to the funeral and it was a Black Pentecostal church and they were just banging out that waltz, boom, you know, saying, Come Thou Fount. I thought, this is crazy. I mean, crazy in a good way. I mean, yeah. Like, this is so intense. So that's one. Another is sometimes when I would go to this church, this Presbyterian church, I used to go with this family, the Poppink family, and they kind of took me in a little bit when my family was a little wonky sometimes. And I remember they sang that song, He Arose, and it's got this funny little kind of echo that the man or the bass sings. It's like, up from the grave he arose with a mighty triumph for his foes, he arose. And the whole family would sing it in the church. And I really loved the playfulness that, you know, there was a call and response and the way they all sang together. And I've thought about that hymn a lot, about them singing it. It's a little maudlin, you know, like the verses are like, down in the grave, yeah. Jesus, my Savior. And then, but it's still pretty great. You know, it's, I like those songs. So those two kind of come to mind. There's lots of others. There's the song, And Can It Be That I Should Gain?
Yeah.
That's one hymn that I don't like the retune as much because I just think it's such a, there's something about the old kind of Byzantine music of the old one that I really like. But the, what I like about it is the lyrics are like a theological textbook, you know, died he for me who caused his pain. I mean, I'm those lyrics are just so dense and amazing. And at one point the singer's in a prison and another, you know, he gets the chains fall off and I went free. And so
yeah.
I really love that song.
It's funny. When we started this show a few years ago, we spent a lot of time in the first season talking about the hymns that were kind of off limits of like, you don't retune that because it's just right the way it is.
Yeah.
And that's one of those that's just so sacred for people in the way it is. And Come Thou Fount is actually that way, I think.
Yeah.
There's a lot of folks that just like, you make them crazy by changing.
Well, I think that, hymns, I mean, Come Thou Fount is one where the tune doesn't change, but you know, the arrangement changes just enough. Like, you know, Sufjan did it on one of his Christmas records and Monique and I played on that.
Did you really?
And yeah, I mean, I think I sort of suggested it for that Christmas record. And it's because at Princeton Seminary, every class was supposed to have a class hymn. And our class hymn was Come Thou Fount. And it was in part because I and a few other people just thought, this hymn is incredible. And again, you know, everybody sort of in my circles now knows it, but I didn't know it then. It seemed new to me. So when we were putting together the second Christmas record, I suggested that, and his arrangement of it is just, I mean, well, he's just so very good at what he does, and his arrangement of that is just so powerful.
We featured his Holy, Holy, Holy on
Oh my gosh.
Advent, and I think it's the most beautiful song ever recorded.
It's one of the, I know. I've never heard a better version of it, and I agree with you. There are a few recorded songs that hit me like that one does. It's crazy.
It's so good. So let's talk resurrection. Resurrection is obviously a significant theme in your life.
It is, yeah.
It's the name of your church, right?
It is, yeah.
Tell me about kind of founding and leading Resurrection Church. What does liturgy look like?
Our liturgy is really traditional. It's traditional Western liturgy. And so, you know, the most obvious example of that that people would know is the Book of Common Prayer, the Episcopal prayer book. But, you know, it's not just the Episcopalians that built their services along that liturgy. A lot of Methodist or Lutheran churches, and obviously the Catholic Church, where you have a call to worship, and then you have a confession of sin, assurance of pardon, and, you know, the gospel reading and stuff. And so we wanted to follow that. I appreciate the formality of it, and I think that's part of who we are as a church. Some churches aren't, I mean, and ours isn't that formal. I mean, we're not, you know, we're not doing the Latin Mass. But it's, I sort of like the guardrails, so to speak, that the liturgy gives.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty traditional liturgy, and we do pretty traditional music as well. You just have like an upright bass and a piano, a vocalist, sometimes a guitar player, and a lot of times we just do straight ahead hymns. I would say maybe a quarter of our hymns are retuned. You know, we do some RUF ones, we do some other ones, but we also lean on, what is it, that Orthodox Presbyterian Church Blue Book? There's an old Blue Book that's got... But I like all kinds of hymns. And we also try to put in things other than hymns. You know, there's a part of me that would just always want to do hymns. And I think you end up missing some catharsis if you don't have some gospel songs in there, or even some praise songs or some contemporary Christian songs. And I like some of those too.
So we're going to throw it back. You guys have a new record out.
Yeah.
Light Up the Stairs, which is fantastic. Yeah, truly, I think one of your best records.
Yeah, I'm proud of it.
But we're going to throw it back a little bit. So 2012, I think you guys released I Know That My Redeemer Lives.
Yeah.
Tell me about that hymn and what about it sort of drew you in, how you came across it.
You know, I think it comes from that verse in the Book of Job where, you know, Job is kind of come to the end of his rope. I mean, I guess he's at the end of his rope from the very beginning of that book. But at some point he says, and I know that I'll stand on the earth and see my Redeemer, not I, not somebody else, but me. I'm going to see him and I'm going to see him in flesh and blood. And it's this anticipation of the resurrection. It's an anticipation of the resurrection of Jesus. And I think of his own resurrection, because he's saying, I'm going to see you face to face. It's interesting now as I think about it, he isn't saying how excited he is about it. It's more sort of awesome. It's more, man, when you see God face to face, and he's talking about that. And so I think that's where the hymn comes from. And again, I think it probably came across me in a powerful way, the same reason any of them do, which is the lyrics, you know, this person who once was dead is now alive again. And that's why we named the church Resurrection. And that's why I like that hymn, because here's this idea, which is really a truth, a reality, which is Jesus has been raised from the dead. And you place your faith in the truth of that and in him in hopes that my body's going to be raised and my heart is going to be raised and all my bad habits and my weaknesses and my shame is all going to be put to death and then raised up in a new way. So that hymn, I really, really like. That might be one where I'm not sure I know the, you know, some songs I know the old tune and I'm like, I want to get rid of this. I want to do a new one. I think I just found that in a hymn book and I thought, this is amazing.
I know that Redeemer lives. What joy this blessed assurance gives. He lives, he lives. Who once was dead, he lives, my ever-living head. To plead for me above, he lives, my hungry soul to feed. He lives to help in time of need. My kind, wise, heavenly friend, he lives and loves me to the end. He lives, and while
I'll sing. He lives my prophet, priest, and king.
So you guys have been putting out records of hymns for years.
Right.
When you do that, is your hope for those to be congregational, or are they more just sort of part of your art?
That's a great question. I would say more the latter, because as I've written these hymns, very few of them did I write with the hope or with the thought that other people would sing them. They were more written because I loved the exercise of writing them and wanted to sing them myself. And some of them are not. I bet you guys have talked about this a lot. The art of congregational singing, the art of congregational leading, and writing a song that is, I wouldn't say easily, but can be taken up by a congregation. It's different than a song that would be written for a singer-songwriter to sing or anybody to sing. And so I don't know that I know how to do that very well. And I know that some people sing some of our retuned hymns or even songs that I wrote. And sometimes they're the songs I wouldn't predict that someone would sing. And sometimes they are or whatever. Anyway, that's just a way of saying my ambitions or my hopes for our music, I won't say that they're modest, but what they are is I try to keep it very particular and focused and just make these songs. And then sometimes people have taken them and run with them and other times not. I don't know. I think that might be sometimes that there are people that are really good at writing hymns that are to be sung congregationally. I'm not sure if I'm one of those people.
Yeah. Kevin Twitt is a perfect example.
Yeah.
Everything the guy writes, or really even that he curates, is so singable.
Yeah.
But see, I think your version of I Know That My Redeemer Lives is one of those. The melody is so simple and easy to kind of lock into. And what was your thought process as you, if you remember now, crafting that melody?
The first thing that I wrote, I think, was there's a little kind of guitar lick that kind of goes, and I'm not a good guitar player. The lick just emerged as I was coming, you know, through the chords. And then I accentuated a little bit. I remember the recording of it more than I do the writing it, because we wrote it. I'm sorry, we recorded it at a church, and Sarah Gregory, who's part of Autotune the New, she sings on it, and Sufjan sings on it too, and I really liked that song, and it felt really pretty, and I was like, I want to, not that you don't pour everything into every song, you do, but this one, I was like, man, I want to really buff this one up as much as I can, and so, man, I really like how they both sang on it, and I really like the piano that he put on it, and a guy named Alex Foote produced it. And so I just want it to be real pretty. You know, like sometimes music isn't that complicated. You're like, I want this to sound really, really pretty. I want this to sound really beautiful.
Yeah.
And I want it to shine somehow. And so you just try to throw everything that you can at it. And in this case, all these talented friends and people that we know, like, go do the most beautiful stuff that you can think of on this. I didn't think about writing it for congregational, but it is simple. Like, you kind of want things to be repetitive and you don't want it to do a whole lot. And you also sort of want it to follow the meter, Because sometimes when you're singing as a singer-songwriter, you're kind of emoting and you're doing different things. Like, you know, I know that you just like, otherwise it won't work if a lot of different people are trying to emote and do other things. And most of the songs that I write, you know, you're singing on the, you know, sing the notes. And maybe if I write a singer-songwriter song, that'll be the one where I'll sing more like Willie Nelson and wait and stop and sing ahead of the measure, or like Paul Simon, where you're kind of half speaking, singing in this beautiful way. But with hymns, I think I want it to exist so that people can all take it up at once and do it communally.
It's funny. I was actually going to ask you about that specific thing, but musically. So like musically, y'all's motif is so different than most of what's out there in like a worship quote unquote context.
Yeah.
And so you guys have, you know, used different instruments.
And right.
But musically, so this, there's this trend in most of like congregational music that's being released today of this very emotive sound. I mean, there's these just sounds that stir you up.
Right.
And you guys go for this really sort of playful, fun sound.
Yeah.
And I was just curious about sort of y'all's musical.
We don't have much of a musical background, so I don't know if it comes from there. I think there's an aesthetic that has come from a lot of the community we came out of, whether it be Sufjan or the Danielson family or other people that we know or our church. That part of it comes out of there. David Crowder, I don't know him well, but he's just been endlessly generous to us.
Really? Okay.
And so years ago, he called us and we came to Waco and played a show that he put together, a worship conference. And I know him enough to know that he likes to put all sorts of different people in the room, you know. So they were there with Gungor, and I think Derek Webb was there, and I think a few other people that are kind of very disparate. Anyway, he and I had that conversation a fair amount where he was talking about his music, and it's really different than ours. Like, in fact, I covered one of his songs, and I completely rewrote it and tore it apart and put it back together. And there's a part of me that would never be able to sing like David. I think his music is really powerful and obviously has a huge impact on lots of people. And it's not who I am, I think, emotionally. Or, I mean, he's got to sing how he sings, and I sing. And I think my singing is way more mannered. It's way more wooden. It's a little more like, I think like David kind of lets go. And I think what his music is able to do, it's more cathartic. It opens people up in a big way. I don't know that mine does that. Ours does that. So I really appreciate the way that it does that. Ours, I don't know. It wasn't ever, nothing we ever did was by intention. It was sort of, you know, these are the people that helped us to learn to play music and make it. And I'm a more quiet person, I think, by design. And so I kind of like, again, like kind of a mannered or more structure or that kind of thing. In terms of it being sort of childlike and playful, I don't know where that comes from, but I cannot tell you how many people have come to us and said, our kids love your record.
Really?
Our children really like your record. We've listened to it before we go to bed, listened to the morning, But For You Who Fear My Name, all the clapping and stomping. And, you know, there have been a couple of people that said, you guys should make a children's record. Our first record is a children's record. Like, it already is. I think, you know, some of the production is super playful and not irreverent, but, you know, we don't take ourselves very seriously. You know, like in terms of the production, especially the first record, Sufjan was like, we're not going to compress this at all. And we're going to, I'm going to mix the vocals super dry and nothing on it's tuned. You can hear, I mean, we're not great singers and some of it's a little wobbly. And that was all not like, okay, we're going to be as twee as possible. It was just like, this is going to be what it is. We're not going to varnish this up. It's going to have some great, beautiful stuff on it, but it's also going to be just what it is. And
so does Sufjan produce y'all's stuff?
He produced the first record. He was, I'd say, something like a consultant on the second record. The third record, not, he didn't play on it. He didn't do anything on it. He's still a kind of guiding light, you know, a sort of star in the sky that we follow aesthetically. I mean, he's a super good friend of ours. But in terms of the music for this record, he didn't, you know, I send him mixes and ask for his advice and stuff like that. But
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Vito, thank you so much
for
letting us share your song
for
and for being on the show. Where can folks find you guys online?
There's a page on the Asthmatic Kitty website. Mm-hmm. There's also a page, our latest record is out on Gospel Songs Union, which is an imprint of Tooth and Nail. So if you Google Welcome Wagon, Gospel Songs Union, you'll find it.
Okay.
And on all the other outlets, Apple, Spotify,
perfect,
Amazon.
We'll post links in the show notes
I appreciate
of the episode
that.
So folks will find you guys. Cool. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
See ya. Really loved getting to sit down with Vito. And after that interview, I got to sit, and it was a house show that they did here in Houston. It was just he and his wife, and they're just so fun live. I mean, it's, you know, unplugged, completely unplugged. At one point, she was playing a harmonica case with her, like for percussion. It was just, they're just so quirky and fun, and just loved those folks. So huge thanks to them for being a part of this episode. Another song that we want to tell you guys about, this is actually not a retuned hymn. It's just sort of a newly written song for the church. I say new in the last 5 or 6 years. Coming out of the Village Church, which is the church that Matt Chandler pastors in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. They released a song several years ago called Behold the Risen Christ. And I just think this is the most fun song to lead. So I don't lead with a band anymore. Most Sundays I lead solo now, but when I was leading at a church with a band, this was like my favorite song to lead. Are you familiar with the song at all?
I'm familiar with it because of you. When we were preparing for this episode, we were talking about hymns that we really wanted to include in an episode about resurrection. And I was struck by the way that you described it. You said, this is my favorite song to lead.
Yeah.
Period. And so I went and listened to it, and it's a fantastic text. I definitely think it fits into the realm of modern hymnody in the sense that it's lyrically, it's sort of structured in the same vein as a lot of the hymns that we feature on the show. And it's very well done melodically, and the recording is just fantastic.
Yeah.
So I was fired up about it because you were so excited about it and wanted to get to, you know, get a chance to share it with our listeners.
Yeah, I think it's an incredible celebration of the resurrection. I also just musically, though, it appeals to me so much. It's just got this incredible little driving electric riff that's played through most of the song, and it moves me musically. So I love it. Want to share with you guys now, this is Behold the Risen Christ from the Village Church.
Thank you.
What is dead now, glorious life. Oh, what joy. Oh, what joy. He found me.
Luke, I can't tell you how good it feels to be back making a show again and kind of be back in this rhythm. What I want our listeners to know is that we're back on track with our monthly format.
Pending any broken bones.
Nobody's breaking any bones. Please don't break any bones.
I'll do my best.
But we're back on track in our monthly format. We'll have a show every month. And just like before, we're asking ourselves as we go along month to month, what time is it? That's something that our friend Jacob has instilled, I think, in both of us is... In the calendars that we move in throughout the year, with the church calendar being one of our favorite ways to tell time, what time is it? What season are we in? And how is that going to be reflected in this podcast going forward? So our next episode will focus on Pentecost.
So really, like, what time is it about to be?
Because of the nature of the show and because of what we try to do with resourcing worship pastors and that sort of thing, we do kind of try to have a view to what's coming up. So that if there's a song on this show that you want to include in your celebrations and in your gatherings, you can do that. So our next episode in May will focus on Pentecost. Last year, we released a Pentecost song about the Holy Spirit that I still really, really love. Holy Spirit Truth Divine, which was retuned for this show,
yeah,
is going to be on a very special upcoming musical project that I'd like you to tell me about.
Yeah, so I've spent the last 13 months at this point working on a record with Josh Moore, who's a producer here in town, an album called Lex Orandi. It's the first of three, Lex Orandi, Lex Credendi, and Lex Vivendi, which is a concept we've discussed on this show before with Jacob Breeze that basically means as we pray or as we worship, so we believe, so we live. And so the first project of those is Lex Orandi. That's a project of mostly retuned hymns. It's going to be Luke Bronner and friends. And so Jolie Britt, who retuned that hymn, actually recorded it for this album. We recorded it together, I should say, for this album. And it's just fantastic. It's easily the best song on the album. So that'll release sometime in the next month or so. I'm not exactly sure. We've got one vocal left to track, and then we've just got to mix and master, and it'll be out there. So excited for that. But it's not the only project that we should talk about.
It's not the only project we should talk about. Very soon, I'll begin releasing a series of hymn singles that I produced with my friend Britt Edwards in Nashville. We're putting it out on his Civility Records label, and we'll release them as one single at a time to kind of get this ball rolling with some of the hymns that I've retuned from Charles Wesley's Eucharist collection, as well as some others. So I'm really excited about that, and we'll have more information about that in the next episode. And I'm excited about your project because I got to play banjo on it too. So
yes, and you sang. You sang on it.
I did sing a little bit, yeah. So that's fun stuff. So we will be back next month with a Pentecost episode. And until then, we're thankful to all of you for listening. We hope that you'll rate and review our show on iTunes. Subscribe to our podcast, however you do that, with iTunes or Stitcher. I think we're even on Spotify now.
It's true. Yeah, we are on Spotify now. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Hymnistry. And if you do that, we'll try to be a little more active on social media.
I'm doing my best. I actually tweeted about this show earlier in the week, and I'll probably tweet at least once more.
In your life. I believe you when you say that. At least once more in your life. John, always such a gift to spend time with you. Thanks so much for your work on this episode.
Thanks, Luke.
We'll see you next time.
Peace.
This episode of Hymnistry was produced by Luke Bronner and John Hatfield. Artwork was designed by Heather Hale.
Theme music was by Indelible Grace. You can find them online at igracemusic.com.